Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. Me, Ty Schalter from 538, joined by Samantha Bunton of NBC Sports and Michael Shoddy of PickWatch.com. It's our key takeaways where we break down all of this weekend's NFL action, all the stuff that went down on Super Wild Card Weekend, and it was wild and a lot of things went down. But first, make sure you are subscribed to the Halftime app. If you're listening to this on Monday, that means tonight for Monday Night Football, Cardinals Rams, we're going to go live at 9 o'clock Eastern, just like we do each week on the Halftime app. Download the Halftime app. Follow me, Shoddy, and Samantha with our Twitter handles at Ty Schalter, at Samantha Bunton, at Shoddy. And then you can just wait for that push notification and jump right on in or chop it up with everybody else. Check out the content people are posting. You can ask us questions in chat with text, or you can actually come up on stage and talk with us during our live show. But before we get to that, we've got to get to our key takeaways from this weekend. Again, a ton of stuff. But the thing that the NFL does not want us to be talking about is what we're going to start with, which is the officiating. Refereeing mistakes or apparent mistakes played huge roles in a couple of games this weekend. First, on Saturday, Cincinnati, there was an inadvertent whistle. Joe Burrow was scrambling close to the sidelines and threw it. And while the ball was in the air, a whistle blew. And it sure looks like at least a couple of Raiders defenders heard it while it was in the air. It was caught for a touchdown. And you know, mass hysteria ensued because the Raiders thought the play was blown dead. The refs got together and ruled, no, that's fine, touchdown anyway, when the rule explicitly doesn't say that. It says if there's an inadvertent whistle, the play is over. And then last night, Cowboys were trying to drive for a miracle, like a second miracle comeback finish. Dak chose to run up the middle. Looked like it was a design play. And gets to within scoring range. It's just a few ticks left. They rush to reset. And the umpire comes running up behind them, has to like wrestle his way through the line, resets the ball. The line has to reset to get offside, and they run out of time. And so everyone is losing their minds that the refs cost or affected the outcome of two different games. Samantha, what do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, we really need to revamp the way that we create, for lack of a better word, NFL playoff officiating crews. This idea of like cobbling crews together that are not necessarily people who work together during the regular season clearly does not work. These guys are not used to each other. Obviously, individual mistakes can still be made and were made and will be made again, but this was not helpful. We do it a little differently in baseball, keep the crews together, and it's the top ranked crews as opposed to the top ranked individuals for how they get these assignments. And of course, in this round, it's not necessarily going to be the best of the best either, but I think they need to follow the baseball model for this. It's not perfect, but it's better than what they're doing. These guys just, they don't know how to work together, and they have enough problems with officiating as it is. But yeah, I mean, the San Francisco Dallas thing was kind of funny. I mean, I know that the Dallas fans and, well, Mike McCarthy, more on that in a minute, zero accountability, just blame the refs, which is pretty much what Dak said too, without really saying it, which is pretty horrendous when you've made the Leon Letter play calls on your last chance to not be eliminated from the postseason, but still not a great look for the referees there. When you look at the screen grab of it, it's kind of horrifying, right? Like, this guy is like running to the back of Dak and he's up there, like he's trying to squeeze into the huddle. Like, it looks like one of those like slapsticky things where the guy runs into the other team's huddle trying to overhear their play, except he was up at the line of scrimmage. Right. Just horrendous. And then of course the the big boy, the whistle that was not heard around the world in the Vegas Cincinnati game. I mean, I feel like I have to address this because our crew was asked, why didn't you guys point this out? And why didn't you? We did hear it. We heard it. But you can't really do much with that in the moment until you know how they're going to handle it. We have to be careful too about sort of the way that we put the stuff out there until we know what the ruling is. But yeah, I mean, we all heard the whistle, so we knew there's not really anything we can do about that other than acknowledge that that whistle did exist. And again, it taking the touchdown away here doesn't guarantee that the Bengals won't score. It's a dead play, not a lost down, so doesn't mean they won't get a touchdown anyway, and the result won't be the same. You don't know how that would have turned out if the game had gone overtime, whatever, whatever. But I understand where the Raiders are coming from. I mean, look at Burrow and Taylor both smirking in their press conferences. I hear a whistle, which was kind of hilarious, and probably the Bengals would have won anyway. But yeah, this was not a great weekend for NFL officiating, and we have had entirely too many of those not great weekends.
Yeah, and the NFL just compounds error after error because, like Samantha said, this mixing up refs, creating quote-unquote all-star groups of refs doesn't really work when so much of reffing is communication. The mechanics of reffing is really what is most important most of the time. Everybody's going to get calls right. Everybody's going to get calls wrong. Everybody's going to see some things. Everybody's going to miss some things. That's just humanity. That's the humanity of the game that we talk about when we talk about in baseball, for instance, you know, can we just replace everything with robots? No, there is a bit of the humanity to the game that if you do sort of put that over reffing, that everything is so technical, you know, games would last 10 hours long because there is literally a foul on every play that you could call. And so refs having certain, you know, quirks or little foibles or things like that, that's just life. But then you maximize those when you take away the communication, the chemistry, and the mechanics between reffing crews that are so important and that people learn to understand throughout the course of the season. So you maximize any potential mistakes there. But again, I've gone back to this every time we've talked about officiating. The NFL is still using a billion-dollar agency, is still using part-time employees for quality control. Uh-huh. That's where I come down on this. That's you cannot. There's two sides to this coin. There's nothing the current refs have done to earn full-time employment. There's nothing they've done to say like, hey, we should reward these guys. And most of them don't want full-time employment because they've got actually better employment elsewhere as like college professors, you know, used car salesmen, lawyers, things like that. But you cannot continue to have part-time employees who only spend part of their time doing this in these big moments. The Jerome Bogers of the world have the game has passed them by. The game has gotten too big for players to sort of go pack meat or work in a steel plant or do all the things that NFL players used to do before training camp. It's gotten too big for refs to do the same. We have to move past this. We have to get to a point where refs are full-time employees. They're constantly spending time in their craft. They're constantly watching film. They're constantly studying the rule book. They're doing the things that make them better because the game demands it.
Yeah, and I've gone back and forth on that over the years. The NFL tried, let's add some full-time referees, you know, let's add a like full-time refereeing crew within kind of the scope of the game. I think the NFL's position has been, we can't tell some of our best referees, you've got to quit your day job as a lawyer, you've got to quit your day job as a professor, or you've got to, you know, or you've got to quit being a ref. They don't want to lose some of the best refs that they already have by making this be a full-time position. But at the same time, like Shadi said, there's a lot of decisions that are going on. The NFL rulebook is pretty unwieldy. And one of the reasons it is unwieldy is that because situations like this and edge cases, the NFL kind of allows itself to be PR bullied into making reactionary rules that are like, okay, well, if that happens again, then the rule is this. So that we would have gotten the right outcome, you know, and that's not how you get to good rules, right? There's so many rules that have, if you go look and read through the rule book, there's so many, and it's literally become like case law. There's like 90 odd pages of actual rules, and then there's like 140 pages of like interpretations and alternative rulings and like case law that comes out of the NFL rulebook. It's an enormous amount of stuff to keep in your head. And you know, my hot take is that I don't think there was a Raider that was within playmaking distance of that play. That would have been a touchdown with or without the inadvertent whistle. By rule, you have to replay the down. And in a sense, the refs kind of did the, what are we going to do here? Hey, let's just come up with the right thing, which is that dude was alone in the end zone and Burrow made a great play. Let's not take that touchdown off the board. But when you have a rule that's black and white as if inadvertent whistle, then replay down, you know, you are going directly against them. There's no room for interpretation there. That one's hard, cold fact. The other thing I thought, this is why, and you know, you guys as three sports media pros who did not play football at a elite level, who were not professionals on the field, this is one thing that I say you don't have to be one of those, but having Tony Romo on the call for that moment with Dak was really good, because Tony Romo could be like, yeah, back when I was the Cowboys quarterback, I knew you can't spot the ball yourself and snap it yourself. In that situation, in a hurry up offense, you've got to find the ref and give the ref the ball.
Just go put it on the goal line. If you can do that, just go put it on the goal line.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So I think it was really valuable to have Romo on the call in that minute. And even though his partner had spent about the last 40 minutes openly rooting for the Cowboys to win, or at least make it interesting, to have the composure in that moment to go, okay, guys, like here's why you shouldn't be screaming that the refs cost a second team a game. And, you know, for me, I don't think they cost the Raiders the game anyway. I think the Bengals were going to win that game, and they did. All right. What, Samantha, there's so much to get to. What is your key takeaway from Super Wildcard Weekend?
Guys, there's so many things I like about football. Josh Allen, yeah. Safeties, chaos goblin bowls. But you know what I really, really also like, especially as like a long-term project, being right about things. And so I would like to talk to you about why Mike McCarthy should be fired again and should never have been hired in the first place. Because game management, clock management, play calling. Oh my goodness. I don't care if it's him or Kellen Moore. You can take Kellen Moore, throw him in a bag and take him with you. Absolutely awful. I mean, we're all going to fixate, right, on the end of the game where you say, what's wrong with you? Why did you not just take two shots at the end zone? Like, why call a draw there? Like, why didn't he stop running sooner to spike the ball? I mean, you could put some of that on Dak, but, you know, he didn't call that play. So, yikes. That was bad, but there was bad sprinkled all the way throughout the game. I mean, this whole business of trying to trick San Francisco's defense into committing a penalty, and they were like right on top of it, just stood there waiting like, oh, okay, we'll go ahead and make some substitutions. Then you're hoping we'll call a timeout. What if you design a whole play to try to get somebody to burn a timeout in the fourth quarter? What? Oh, I mean, that almost feels like the Kyle Shanahan version of screwing up the play calling, like outsmarting yourself, except Mike McCarthy outsmarted himself and outdumbed himself all in one little thing rolled up together. But I mean, this was just horrendous. And it's not just the fact that the Cowboys kind of crashed and burned, because this is not the first time we've seen this out of a Dallas team in this position. But it is under the helm of, remember when we talked about Brandon Staley and we were saying about the decision to call the timeout that cost them their playoff spot. We said, hey, this isn't fireable for this guy, but it might be under different circumstances. And I think that's kind of what we're looking at here with Mike McCarthy, is that like, the decisions that he made yesterday probably would not be fireable for, say, Cliff Kingsbury if he turned around and made them, because we're still in sort of the opening bars of that. And I know Mike McCarthy is relatively new to this job, but he's certainly not new to NFL head coaching. This is a longstanding gripe that we have all had with him. You know, Jerry Jones, I think, wants to kill him. He didn't exactly make a secret of that. And then to come out after the game and basically stand there and with zero accountability and act like the refs did this to you, which, guess what? You were going to lose this game. It had nothing to do with the refs. And I know your fans threw garbage on the field and Dak is throwing gasoline on the fire and whatever, but really, really bad luck. Like, get this guy out of here. Get him out of here.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. this Dallas Cowboys team was too talented not to A, win this game, or B, win a Super Bowl. Like all season long, I sort of fought against the notion that this team wasn't good, but on literal primetime moments, it became, yeah, but this team isn't well coached. This team doesn't deserve to be here. This team is quite literally not ready for primetime, and that's on coaching. And I think one of the interesting things about this game is how many people are like racing to fire Mike McCarthy and then either replace him with Dan Quinn or Kellen Moore, or, you know, fire Mark McCarthy, but give me Kellen Moore for my team. Like, coordinators are more than just, as Samantha says, scheme lords. They're more than just like put up in a box with their X's and their O's. They're coaches. They're tasked with getting their players ready. They're tasked with things like discipline, with making sure their players understand the game, understand the schemes. If anybody is responsible for Dak Prescott A, running that play, or B, not getting down soon enough, it's Kellen Moore. If Mike McCarthy says he called the play, he called the play, but Kellen Moore has to be the first guy to be like, okay, if that's the play, here's exactly what we got to do. That's part of being an offensive coordinator. I've done the job, not at the NFL level, but if your coach is calling a play above you, you have to make sure all of your players understand what's going on in that moment. And he had time to do so. You've got time to talk because Dak has that green dot in his helmet. You can tell him, hey, make sure you go 10 yards and then get down, give yourself up. Let's spike the ball, hand the ball to the ref. You can say all those things before the clock hits 30. So I think that this team is a player or two, probably on the offensive line, and a coach away from a Super Bowl championship. I don't love the Dallas Cowboys, but I think this team is too talented to look as bad as they've looked at points this season. And Samantha's right. That's on Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, and it's so hard because when you get up into this situation where you have a team that is a Super Bowl contender, that should be a Super Bowl contender, that has enough talent and everything kind of comes together, and you realize only in the playoffs, yeah, no, this wasn't good enough. This coaching wasn't good enough. We needed to be different. Now you go and you go, okay, well, who is out there? Who is available that is definitely going to do a better job than Mike McCarthy? And the answer, like, you should have asked that question when you hired coaches to begin with, because now you change this on the fly. You come back next year. Maybe this team isn't as good. You know, maybe everything doesn't come together quite the same way. Even if you go out and add talent, you know, how much more does Zeke really have in the tank? You know, all these questions start to come around. You know, that offensive line already had kind of faded. You know, some of these guys are not as consistent as they used to be. You know, you've got to reinvest in some of these areas if you want to be as good as you were this year. And then you have to go get somebody who's proven that they're better at those things than Mike McCarthy. And again, the time to do that was when you were hiring coaches and you hired Mike McCarthy. So it's an unfortunate situation for the Cowboys. Jerry Jones, said he was extraordinarily disappointed. And I'm sure that is a massive understatement for how much he had his hopes pinned on this game. We talked about it last week. I did not trust the Cowboys. I did not trust Mike McCarthy. I did not trust this team to be ready and to execute when they needed to execute. And I didn't necessarily trust Kyle Shanahan either, but he wins the bull of these untrustworthy coaches. And it's because he clearly outcoached Mike McCarthy.
I'll say this, though. The difference between Mike McCarthy and Kyle Shanahan to an extent, but more importantly, DeMeco Ryans, who really screwed the pooch as a defense coordinator on that last drive, just giving up the sideline over and over again. And even Kellen Moore, is those guys are young. Those guys have a chance to learn. I think Mike McCarthy, you know, we know what we're getting out of him.
Yeah, I think Kellen Moore, to me, like, I can't believe this guy is still being interviewed at this point. I actually don't think he's done a particularly good job for quite a while. There was like 3 weeks where people got overexcited about him, and then the Cowboys kind of hung on. But, you know, we've seen way too many of this. They're really predictable in their play calling. I mean, you can kind of set your watch to it, particularly early in games. If you watch what they do the same freaking thing every time. It's making the Cowboys fans crazy because it's like they can see it soak in the opponent. And I mean, as much as we're taking some shots at D'Amico Ryans, you know, I think the 49ers were better prepared for this game and they executed better. And that was on the coaching staff. And Kyle certainly had his share of like, oh, Kyle, please don't get cute. Let's not do stuff like this. This is not a good situation in which to test out weird ideas. But for the most part, they way outcoached what is theoretically a more talented team, but the 49ers are plenty talented enough. I mean, I think we didn't really have any trouble. I think everybody here took the 49ers in this game. We didn't trust Dallas. There's a reason for that. Mike McCarthy, probably the next head coach of the Bears, which is just its own nightmare for those poor Bears people, because goodness knows they haven't suffered enough. But I mean, I wonder too about, you know, more Dan Quinn. I mean, what do we do here? I mean, I love Dan Quinn and I was, you know, pounding the table for Dan Quinn to Denver, but like they had some very, very costly defensive penalties here, as you pointed out, Shadi. Like that's the discipline issue is there. And it really makes me wonder about this whole group, but I also wonder too a little bit about Dan Quinn, about what, you know, his situation would be if he got away from this particular group, or maybe I just want to believe in Dan Quinn. So I'm doing it, but I know I don't believe in Mike McCarthy. So can't see the back of him fast enough. Dallas fans, I'm sorry. I think you guys deserve better than this. I don't think you should throw trash at your own team, but you know, you can throw trash at Mike McCarthy. I would have understood that.
All right, Shadi, what is your key takeaway from all of the stuff that went down this weekend?
So speaking of bad coaching, there's Bill Belichick. So I want to just, you know, preface this, and I'm going to say similar things about Bill Belichick that I've said all season long about Pete Carroll, that when you realize that these types of guys are done, you don't fire them. You don't, you know, give them the boot in quite the same way as you might give a Mike McCarthy. Bill Belichick is, I think, bar none, the best coach in NFL history. If he's made any mistakes, it's been as a GM over the years, having total roster control. But he is one of the, if not the most influential figures in New England Patriots history, except for maybe Tom Brady. And Bill Belichick deserves to do whatever the heck Bill Belichick deserves or wants to do. And that means if Bill Belichick wants to coach again, Bill Belichick gets to coach again. That's just, I think, life. I think that's just reality. That being said, Bill Belichick should not be allowed to coach again. Like, Robert Kraft needs to get in Bill Belichick's ear ASAP and say whatever sort of title or job or honor you want to stay around the game, stay around your son who's, you know, been the defensive coordinator. The game has passed Bill Belichick by, and sort of all of the interesting things about Bill Belichick a decade ago just aren't there anymore. We talked about for decades how the New England Patriots could beat you in like 20 different ways. They would just, you know, they'll find the thing you do best and just take it away. The Patriots don't do that as much anymore. They are not as good at that. And in terms of game management, other coaches, bad coaches Mike McCarthy has passed him by in terms of proper game management. When Bill Belichick, down multiple touchdowns at midfield, was punting in the second and third quarter of a playoff game, it showed me this is an old man who's done with football. And he was giving up on the season. And I think the Patriots need to, quote unquote, give up on him. Again, I don't think you fire him. I think everything should be done behind the scenes because this guy deserves all of the plaudits, all of the honor. But if I see Bill Belichick coach another game, I might pull my gosh darn hair out.
Wow. Okay. So in some respects, I completely agree with you and can see sort of exactly what you mean. And they're not the same team that they once were. The innovation isn't there. I also feel like we are all really hitting Belichick hard for like one really, really bad game after a season that was actually pretty darn good for a roster that wasn't very talented. So the tricky part with Belichick, I think, is that it's easy. Normally when it's a coach, we can look at a season like this and say, hey, look what this guy did with a group that's really just not that good and a rookie quarterback, but he's also pretty much the GM there. So he's the one who put that roster together. So, I mean, I think at what point do we say, okay, well, if your most other coaches will kind of give you a pass there and say, hey, I know it wasn't great, but look what you did with this sort of very middling, slightly above average, but not great roster, but you're the man who built the roster. And I actually think that my issue with Belichick is more about that kind of stuff than it is about the coaching. I mean, was this a badly coached game? Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. He totally gave up. I'm telling you, this game, the only person who even got off the bus was Mac Jones. The rest of them, including the coach, looked like they were phoning it in the second they were down 14-0. But for the most part, I actually don't have much issue with Belichick's coaching job, especially when you look at it as a whole season. But the front office decisions, the player personnel decisions that have led to the spot that they're in now, and I know the standards are different here. I mean, trust me, as a Browns fan, if this is how our season finished in Cleveland, we would have been jumping for joy. Like, oh no, it was only our third first round exit in however long. Like, I cry me a river. It's just like those Cowboys fans who are crying about, we're so tortured, it's been 20 years. Like, okay, I don't want to hear from you. But yeah, I mean, I guess that the Belichick decision-making stuff, I almost wonder if we should leave him in place to coach, but if kind of need to take a little something off the top and say, hey, somebody needs to come in and manage the personnel end of this because it's deteriorating and I don't think they can stop the slide.
Yeah, Samantha, you went right where I was going. I think for me that the key moment was when Micah Hyde made just one of the most unbelievable interceptions maybe I've ever seen, you know, going up over the top and just cleanly picking the ball out of the air.
Oh, it was beautiful, wasn't it? So beautiful.
So good. So good. And I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see the reverse angle because I wasn't sure which receiver it was over. And they show the reverse angle and it's Nelson Agholor. And I was kind of like mentally tweeting, like, Nelson Agholor is still wondering why the ball isn't in his hands. Like, he's still looking around like, where's that ball go? And then my second thought was, why the hell is Nelson Agholor playing in this game? What? This is who the Patriots brought, you know, to reclaim the AFC. Like, this is what is this roster? And you remember a year ago, I'm honestly shocked that this wasn't a narrative throughout the season, because we spent from, you know, March through July talking about how the Patriots had cracked open the war chest and blown almost an entire salary cap's worth of dollars on free agents to bolster this roster because the cupboard was bare. Because after 15 years of drafting lacrosse players to be special team specialists, you know, eventually you actually need some football players. Like, yeah, and yeah, this is the spot where we're at, where Bill Belichick has not been scouting and developing players at a lot of very important positions across the field. And, as great a job as this staff has done with Mac Jones, identifying him, sitting pat, waiting for him to fall to them, developing him, getting him ready, cutting Cam Newton, going all in on him, everything, that's all great. But if you don't have enough protection, if you don't have enough of a run game, if you don't have any difference-making weapons for him, you know, the scheme and play calling and week-to-week adjustments that made you unstoppable 10, 15, 20 years ago, and with Tom Brady at the helm, like, there's only so far that can take you. You still have to have difference makers, and there certainly aren't enough difference makers on defense. And we'll talk a little bit more about the rest of the game, but I agree that you can't have Bill Belichick run every single aspect of the football operation by himself. And I mean, for God's sake, this man has turned out 112 protégés who failed elsewhere, but like, bring some of them back or have some of these, somebody needs to have more, you need more chefs in the kitchen at this point. And whether that's, he needs to go, get bumped up to a better title and less responsibility, or he needs to be told he's the football coach and someone else is going to have to scout some players for him or whatever it is, they need to figure it out, because just Bill Belichick and a team full of C-plus guys is not going to beat the Bills and the Chiefs.
And that's kind of where I want to end this topic, because all of those dozens of protégés who've gone elsewhere, that could happen again this season. We're talking about, you know, Josh McDaniels is rumored to be one of the top guys of the Vikings. And he came back to the Patriots to be the head coach in waiting. Jared Mayo has taken a bunch of interview requests, and whether or not those are actual interviews or Rooney Rule interviews, like, we'll see. But everyone has considered for the last couple of years him to be a top potential coaching candidate. Elliot Wolf in the front office for years has been considered one of the true, like, young gurus of personnel stuff, and has bounced around since he left the Packers and is considered, you know, a hot GM commodity this offseason. You can simply shift gears and move forward with making Bill Belichick your president of football operations, Elliot Wolf your GM, Josh McDaniels your head coach, and, you know, you're probably going to lose Jared Mayo anyway. But you can move forward with all of those and sort of be the same team you've been and potentially get better and get fresher and have new energy next season and sort of take where you left off. Or you can lose two or three of those guys, let Bill Belichick coach another season or two, and then really have to tear things down and start fresh and ruin a couple of Mac Jones's early prime years of his career.
All right, well, we are just getting into the prime minutes of this episode. We've got our key takeaways where we break down every single game, tell you what you need to know, what we can take away from it going into the divisional round right here when we get back on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, we're back on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. Key takeaways every single game. Look over the results and our picks, courtesy of PickWatch.com. Over the last decade, more than 10 million people have used PickWatch to help source picks from the very best experts and users in both NFL media and the fan base at large. Now, with PickWatch Pro, you can get advanced analytics and insights to take your game to the next level. Use offer code 3OUTPOD for 25% off your first year of membership. That's the word 3OUTPOD, all spelled out just like our Twitter handle, just like our Instagram handle, just like our website, threeoutpod.com. Use that code for 25% off your first year of PickWatch Pro. Go to pickwatch.com/pro for more details. All right, guys, super wild card weekend, they're calling it, and it was pretty super overall. Let's go Bengals 26, Raiders 19. Raiders were getting 5 in this. It was not enough. Bengals win and cover. Shadi, what do you take away from this game?
This game was more competitive than I think the Bengals wanted it to be. For much of this game, I was waiting to see the Raiders superstars really show up in a really convincing way. And I think I don't want to put too much at his feet, but I think there's a narrative about this game that if Darren Waller is Darren Waller in this one, maybe it gets even closer. Maybe the Raiders pull an upset. But I think when push came to shove and you needed guys to step up the Bengals were those guys. And I think the Raiders weren't. But as I've said before, and as I think I said in the preview to this game, if you just keep playing along the string, I think Rich Bisaccia, both in the regular season and in this game, earned the right to be the coach next season and to keep seeing this team through. Because this is a good football team.
Yeah, I agree. I think Carr said after the game, he was singing Rich Bisaccia's praises and then saying they should keep him. And I agree with him. And also, let's just murder the Derek Carr to Cleveland rumor right now. That's not happening. No, not going to happen. But
wait,
yeah.
Samantha, is that not going to happen, or is that you willing it not to happen?
Wave the sage. Speak it into existence.
No, this is not a personal opinion one. I mean, do I want that to happen? Not particularly. It's like a more expensive version of the same quarterback with less mental toughness. But no, I would say it's not going to happen because I can't see a scenario where Vegas wants to trade it at this point. So that's why I don't think it will happen. It actually doesn't have anything to do with the Browns. Like, this is like Cleveland fans, not always about you. You can't control this. So, but I digress. I'm way off to the side here. But Carr didn't have a great game here. Shoddy correctly shouted out Darren Waller. I think that was a big thing too. Alex Leatherwood really, really struggled here. And then, I mean, you see stuff like Vegas just, they did a good job of hanging in. I will give them that. And I think this team deserves a lot of credit for doing just that all season long. Nothing to hang your heads at, but I mean, you're throwing short of the sticks on your last play of the game where it's do or die. Like, that's the kind of stuff that just makes me want to, like, bash my head into a wall. Like, are you even trying? What a stupid thing to do. Terrible, terrible, terrible choice. And I'm happy for the Bengals. It's been a really long time, 31 years. I mean, we've all seen the stuff about, I couldn't send a text message the last time the Bengals were in the playoffs, which is, like, pretty sad. But, it, you know, Zach Taylor's running around downtown Cincinnati handing things out to drunk people in bars. Like, what a fantastic thing for that city. I'm stoked for them. That's cool.
Yeah, and you guys know I wrote at 538.com this week about how, you know, the main outcome of the Raiders getting the Bengals instead of the Chiefs was not that the Raiders had an easier shot to advance, but that the Bengals had an easier shot to advance because they got the Raiders instead of the Patriots. Well, now I'm not so sure that was true, but either way, it's academic because the Bengals were the better team. They blew some opportunities early, got a turnover early, got a couple of opportunities that turn into field goals instead of touchdowns. They're going to have to fix that going forward when you're looking at Josh Allen, when you're looking at Patrick Mahomes, and you're looking at these are the teams we're going to have to outscore. You got to be able to do better than 26 points against a Raiders team that played that poorly overall. Again, plenty of fight from Vegas, but still overall, the right team won. Quick aside, guys, I don't like using, I don't like that Vegas now doesn't mean the odds maker.
I was just thinking that. I was like, just thinking that. I hate it so much because I'm like, what are you talking about? Why do the bettors care?
Right.
What should we call it? That's an off-season project for us, guys. Let's think about what we're going to call the Raiders to get around this other than just the Raiders. Absolutely. I'm writing that down.
Okay. All right. We'll do that. So next game on our list, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Bills 47, Pats 17. Pats didn't quite cover despite getting 4 points. and I actually did take Bills to win, but Pats to cover. That's extremely funny. Samantha, anything more you can take from this?
This was the least boring blowout that I've ever seen. I mean, this game had everything.
Oh, yeah.
It was just absolutely amazing. We had a play right off the bat where Josh Allen ran around for almost 10 seconds before hitting Dawson a touchdown in the end zone. It was incredible. We had a fat guy touchdown. We had some pretty incredible play from little teeny Singletary. He was delightful as well. We had somebody in the crowd holding up a poster that was a really convincing Photoshop of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick making out. We had Ryan Fitzpatrick shirtless in the stands, a quarterback, for an active quarterback for another team in the stands without a shirt, rooting for the Bills. We had a recreational device thrown onto the field in the end zone when the Patriots scored a touchdown. I mean, this game was bananas, and that's before we even get to the whole thing where the Bills, I mean, they got them 480 offensive yards, which was the maximum they could have gotten. because for the first time in NFL history, there were no punts, field goals, or turnovers by an NFL offense. So what an exciting performance. And it's just nothing I love more than Josh Allen, you guys. Absolutely nothing.
First and foremost, I've been to Walgreens. Those are health devices, not recreational devices. Second of all, I just want to double down on this. And I had this talk with some of the coaching Twitter people over the weekend. Coaches learn early on to minimize risk. And Bill Belichick is from the era where you, within a game, need to minimize risk. And Ty has talked about this in the past, where you sort of keep your game alive to the end. And that's good for one person. And that's the executive of the media company that the game is on. Like that is where if you have a game that is close to the end, that works for that person and that person alone. Because if you're going to lose a game, it doesn't matter if you lose it in the final seconds or if you lose it in the first quarter. And Bill Belichick lost this game in the first quarter because he was continually trying to minimize risk. He was continually trying to say, we can play this game of field position. Well, Josh Allen was not playing a game of field position. Brian Daboll was not playing a game of field position. They were playing a game of shove this ball down Bill Belichick's throat. That's the game that they were playing, and it worked really well for them, not so much for Bill Belichick. So by minimizing risk over and over and over, he continually got himself in a position where all of a sudden the Bills defense never had to play run defense toward the end of the game against one of the best rushing offenses in the league. They knew Mac Jones had to come out throwing, and it changed the course of this game. And I think if you look back at this game and you say one or two of those midfield fourth down decisions, if those had gone the other way, sure, you can go for it and fail. It didn't matter. If they had gone for it and failed, the Bills would have just scored anyway. They were scoring no matter what. But if you go for some of those and make it and end up scoring on those drives, the entire tenor of this game changes. I'm not saying the Pats win, because I'm not sure anyone is beating the Bills that night. But I think you change the character of this game in a way that makes it much closer, much more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for me, the Bills, this is so meaningful to those fans. This is so, like, to have that cold weather game and all the, you know, all the people, there's been a lot of talk. Mina Kimes had a viral tweet where she was talking about, like, if you want to maximize Josh Allen, build a dome, because you want that dude running around, gripping it and ripping it, chucking it downfield, and you know, that is better in a warm weather, a cold, you know, with no wind, all that sort of stuff, than to be outside in the elements. But Josh Allen was outside. There were plenty of elements. He had all the breath, all the, and he was in his element. And I think that's fantastic for him. That's fantastic for the fans. They got this big win against the boogeyman from across the division. And it does look like a changing of the guard. And Shadi, you said the name that was on my lips, which is Brian Daboll. I thought last year Brian Daboll was kind of left at the altar. I thought he was probably the best overall coaching candidate. Everybody was like, hey, he and Tom Telesco used to be like homies back in the day, like prep school. They went to like college together, da 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 da. Obviously, he's coming to the Chargers, and then it didn't happen. And I think this was kind of a resume on the table moment for Brian Daboll. He's like, I just outcoached the shit out of Bill Belichick.
That wasn't his resume on the table. That was his recreational device on the table. That was.
He pulled that thing out and slapped it down. I was like, hire me. Hire me. Come can get me.
Are we talking about Mike Vrabel now? I mean, where are we even at now?
can I just say also that I just loved, we need to create the meme with Samantha leading into this game, like Stefan from SNL. Like, this game had everything. It had dildos on the field. It had running around and throwing to Dawson Knox in the end zone. It had a shirtless, you know, it was great. It was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so I don't even know where to go for this, because this is is an epic game. I think it was kind of the game of the weekend and potentially of the year in terms of changing of the guard moments. But other games happened, and we had Bucks 31, Eagles 15. And, you know, we both, the Eagles were getting 8.5. I still picked the Bucks outright and to cover, but that line moved over the weekend to the point where some places had it at 7 on Sunday morning. I did a radio spot Sunday morning, and they're like, yeah, like, Ty, why is the line moving towards the Eagles? I'm like, because it feels like Eagles plus 8.5, they're going to play tight. They're going to, you know, they're going to play physical. They're going to control the ball. They're going to run. They're going to play great defense. It's going to be low scoring. That looks like great, a great number. I don't like 7 as much, though. And then it turned out that's not how it went down. Shadi, what did you think of this?
The Eagles came into this game wanting to do one thing. Let's just control the clock, keep the ball out of Tom Brady's hand. Let's run the ball. We've got one of the best offensive lines. We've got the best rushing attack in football. Over the course of the season, it was better than the Colts. It was better than the Titans. It was better than the Cowboys. It was better than all the other teams we think of as like hardcore rushing teams. It was the Eagles that were the best. And the Buccaneers said, They Dikembe finger wagged it and just said, every single time you put the ball in one of your not running back's today. Hands, we are going to be right there in the backfield between Vita Vea and Levante David, who was fresh for this game. Shaq Barrett had himself a day. Every single time they ran like an RPO, like Jalen Hurts couldn't even see what was going on because the front was just shifting and firing so fast. This was a masterful day by the Buccaneers defense. As much as we're going to talk about, you know, Tom Brady and his like 60-year-old playoffs and all the things, Mike Evans looked great on the offensive side of things, but you can do that because the Eagles absolutely could not run the football the way they're accustomed to running the football. Just fantastic day by that defense. Having Levante David back completely changes the character of this team. And I think the moment of the playoffs for me is watching 300 and like bajillion pound Vita Vea dropping back in coverage towards the end of this one. And I actually think he was spying. I think he was spying on that play. And I would have loved to see Jalen Hurts take off and Vita Vea track him down, because I think Vita Vea can track Jalen Hurts down.
I totally agree. It was so great. That was my, it's like, that is the world's biggest spy. I'm into this. This is great. I have only two other comments on this game. One is which is that we need a statistical designation for non-garbage time shutouts, because that was what this was. So 31-0 Tampa, let's give credit where credit is due. And also, I just want to put out there, like, can everybody maybe just back off Jalen Hurts a little bit? I mean, he's had like less than two seasons of experience. His defense did him dirty. His receivers did him dirty. Did he have a good game? No. Is he a very, very young player? I mean, let's give him the same sort of courtesy that we gave to Mac Jones, who, for the record, I do think played a better game than Jalen Hurts did. He certainly made better decisions, if nothing else. But, you know, this kid's going to be back. I think he's going to be okay. I don't like the idea of giving up on him yet. I would also like to point out that he was in a walking boot after this game, so let's take that into consideration as well. I don't know why the Eagles didn't put Gardner Minshew in the middle of this game. It actually would have probably helped both of them. So that's a little baffling, but let's cut poor Jalen Hurts a break, huh?
I will cut the slack for Jalen Hurts for sure. But Shadi, you kind of touched on where I was headed with this, which this is now 2 years in a row where Todd Bowles has played a game of like season long rope-a-dope with this defense, where you think, okay, the Bucks are a great offensive team, they have so many weapons, ooh, defense is a little porous, and then tightens it up at the end. But this year they were even worse. I'm almost positive it was like week two or week three, the Bucks defense was like in the 30s in a lot of metrics in terms of yards being allowed and points being allowed and that. And now they're even better. Like, they finished, I think, in the top five in scoring defense, and they looked absolutely unstoppable against the Eagles offense. And you start to go, wait, okay, if this is what we're getting, if this is the Bucks defense, Tom Brady doesn't need Antonio Brown, Tom Brady doesn't need Chris Godwin, Tom Brady doesn't even need to be Tom Brady to outscore teams if the defense is going to play like that consistently for the rest of the NFC playoff bracket. 49ers 23, Cowboys 17. We did touch on the Mike McCarthy side of this, the Cowboys coaching. But there's a lot of stuff going on in this game. Samantha, what'd you think?
I think the 49ers could probably hang with anybody and possibly even win the Super Bowl. I also think that they could get like the crap kicked out of them by Green Bay next week. Tough to say, really. One thing that really stood out to me in this particular game, and we certainly had some, I think, valid criticism with D'Amico Ryans earlier, but the four-man rush here, they were using against Dallas, incredibly effective. Dak was like 16 of 34 against it. It's so hard to beat the zone coverage when you do that, and you have forced these guys to throw into these really, really tight windows, and Dak just couldn't make it happen. The receivers were not precise enough. That the Dallas offense just looked incredibly overwhelmed by this. If you can make that work for you, then it's really, really hard to combat just all the way across the field for the opposing offense, and Dallas was just absolutely lost. So, Bosa, he got conked in the head by his own teammate, so I think he'll probably be okay to go next week. Not sure about Fred Warner. I think those are significant injuries to keep an eye on for San Francisco, and what else can you say? It was not a particularly well-played game by either team, but San Francisco kind of eked it out.
This game played out a lot like I thought it was going to, except for the last Jimmy Garoppolo interception, because it was almost there. Like, they turned the ball over twice in the fourth quarter, but I really thought there was going to be like one last moment for Jimmy Garoppolo to hand this game away, because he's known for doing that. That is a thing that he does. And when he throws multiple interceptions, the 49ers usually lose. And I honestly thought he was going to throw two in the fourth quarter. So the Cowboys were closer than they needed to be in this one for all the reasons Samantha said. I think D'Amico Ryans had his defense ready to play, but that's different than calling a masterful game. So often we say like, hey, this defense coordinator called. No, he didn't. He lined up his defense. They stayed in base the entire time, and they were just ready for what the Cowboys threw at them. There weren't a whole lot of changes, a whole lot of different fronts other than some defensive line calls. Everyone literally just lined up and beat the guy in front of them until the end. And that's where D'Amico Ryans, some of the blitzes he called on the final couple of drives, I thought that was really cool. I think he needs to mix those more in if you're going to beat Aaron Rodgers, because I don't think you can just line up and beat Aaron Rodgers. And I do think we are going to see at some point next week, like, Davante Adams just run up the middle of the field and no one for the 49ers be there, because D'Amico Ryans learned and is probably going to have to over-adjust to protecting the sidelines this week, because I cannot believe in a final drive the Cowboys were able to just throw those itty-bitty passes and get like 10 yards a clip and get out of bounds like the 49ers were trying to hand it to him. This almost looked like one of those games where fans are going to point to and say, yeah, the NFL is rigged for ratings, or yeah, the NFL is rigged because they want the Cowboys to win, because it almost looked like a push job towards that end of the game. So kudos to the 49ers. I'm not sure you can beat the Packers, but kudos for winning this one.
Yeah, I think the 49ers are the NFC's Bengals for me in terms of this is the team that I think, you kind of don't want to face. The not top seeded team that could beat anybody on their best day. I think this is a fascinating game for me, because the 49ers continue to coach themselves both into and out of victories, sometimes in the same game. Like, you compare these, the first few drives, it's like 49ers touchdown, Cowboys three and out, 49ers chip shot field goal, Cowboys three and out, 49ers again, field goal, Dallas gets a first down, but then holding penalty, and they end up punting from their own 19. 49ers field goal. I mean, it's like this is like scoring drive, three and out, scoring drive, three and out, scoring drive, effectively three and out, and you're like, wow, like all the pregame preparation, everything that went into this week, totally all in the 49ers favor, and then they almost botched it at the end, almost gave it away twice, and you still end up with the win. You start to wonder, it's like, okay, that how many times can Kyle Shanahan roll the dice between his own mistakes and Jimmy Garoppolo's mistakes and still get W's? How much preseason, how much pregame preparation are you going to have to do this week to give yourself enough of an edge over the Cowboys to continue to be the underdog, to continue to be Cinderella? Chiefs 42, Steelers 21. And guys, they made it interesting for a minute, didn't they?
No, not really. Like,
Like a minute.
Yeah, like this game, again, I think played out exactly how this one I got right, because there was that like heavyweight bout style, like we're gonna like throw some jabs and feel each other out. And Andy Reid's kind of famous for that. Andy Reid does not usually come out firing all cylinders. It takes him a while to get that momentum going. But then once he did, like this was just a much better team in all three phases. And there was actually a point probably in like the second quarter where I thought, oh, that's it. That's the ball game. It was like the first time the Chiefs scored. I was like, that's it. And then the Steelers, that's when it was interesting. When the Steelers sort of came back from that, they did that little, the plucky thing that they did. But no, over the course of this game, just the much, much better team just leaned into the Steelers and they fell apart. And the Steelers were a bad football team. Like I'm against all of this anti-7 seed discussion because it's like 1 year in, and I think that's a really stupid time to start having knee-jerk reactions to stuff. But honestly, like I watched this game and was like, can't we get the Colts? Like couldn't after this at halftime, couldn't you like call up another team because the Steelers weren't it?
Yeah, Shadi, we're going to need to get into that more at some point, because I totally agree with you. This slander of the 7 seed, like, not now, not now, not good, no, absolutely not, but I agree with you. The Colts, the Chargers, I mean, heck, the Ravens. I mean, I could go pretty far down the list and feel like I was getting something better, or at least something more interesting than what we saw here. I mean, and there was, like you said, Ty, you know, there was like this moment in the fourth quarter in the first quarter where it was like, punt, punt, punt. And my little antenna popped up and it was like, garbage bowl? Oh. And then we got the exact game that we thought we were going to get, which was just as boring as we thought. It was
You're such a sick woman. You're just such a sick woman.
I know. I'm leaning into it and celebrating it. I'm not even going to pretend anymore. Stay away from me, everyone. Stay away. if New England Buffalo was like the fun, exciting blowout, this was the exact opposite. This was like just everything that you don't want in a blowout. Go home, Steelers. Absolutely terrible. I actually had no notes for this game. I mean, I'm surprised I even had anything to say about it, because there was nothing worth writing down as it was happening.
AS Goblin says, perfect game, no notes.
Yeah, 0-0. It was like one of those where like I was writing something else and keeping an eye on it. It's like, oh, still 0-0. Second quarter, still 0-0. Like, wait, what? TJ Watt, fumble return, like 7-0 Steelers. Okay, now I'm gonna. And then literally in 10 minutes of game time, the Chiefs scored 5 touchdowns. It's like, okay. All right. Normalcy has been restored. Like, that was it. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever seen a team like shift it out of neutral and into gear and like, oh, okay, game on. All right, fine. Game over. There you go. We got one more on Super Wild Card Weekend into the week. It's a long holiday weekend in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. We've got Cardinals-Rams tonight on Monday Night Football. Of course, we will be doing it live via halftime. And this could actually be the most interesting matchup. To either of you, like, what are you guys both looking forward to most in this one?
I think this might be the most fun game we're going to get this week that's competitive. It's going to be tough to top the Buffalo game for fun. But if we're talking about fun because it's actually relatively close and competitive between the two teams, because, like, let's face it, San Francisco Dallas was not fun. It was interesting, but it wasn't fun. So I think we're going to get something different here. I mean, it feels like this is more like a feeling than a concrete fact. But like, don't you guys get the like, oh, I feel like this game is going to be the one where we're like enjoying it, where like football becomes fun again, where we can, it's like lighter, I think, than 49ers Cowboys, which had like some pretty heavy implications, I think, for the Cowboys not being able to go forward and the history of the matchup and all that, which is good in some ways. But this one feels like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is just two really, really exciting teams that I think are relatively evenly matched coming in here. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions on the table. You know, both of these coaching staffs have been great at times and awful at other times during the season. Stafford, I mean, he's always great for a quarter hero ball and then the game-crushing interception, and Kyler's been all over the place. So it's anybody's game, which I think is awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is almost the narrative bowl as well, because you've got this, you know, can the Cardinals close, because they historically don't, the coach historically doesn't, you know, is this going to be just more of the same, or are they going to come out? And sort of the flip side of the narrative is these super teams typically don't close well either. When you go out and spend a ton of money on free agents, those guys don't really gel quite the same way. And so you don't have as many, you know, the glue, the connective tissue that holds a team together through the playoffs is usually teams that have stuck together, and you have a lot of drafted talent on those teams and teams that have been together a couple of years, usually. So we're going to be talking about a lot of different competing narratives tonight. I think I'm really excited. The thing I'm most excited to see is J.J. Watt, because I think J.J. Watt is back for this one, and that should be fun to see. And does that sort of shift the table a little bit more towards the Cardinals, who I picked anyway? I think it does. I think that just being in J.J. Watt's presence probably gives this team a little bit of a boost, and that defense maybe the boost that they need to pick Stafford off like a second or third time.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fascinated by this one, because I have consistently, when it's come to these two teams playing, felt like the Rams are the more desperate team, because they did go all in, because they did bet everything on this, and they need it. You know, they need this game. So obviously, there was, you know, the first game they played early on against the Cardinals, they lost. Then the second one we were broadcasting live on halftime, they won. And I really felt like it was that desperation that made the difference. Both of these teams want it. Both of these teams want to capitalize. And obviously, the Cardinals, you know, had a bumpier final third of the season. And the Rams had a better one, including that win. So I feel like the Rams are going to take this, but I am ready for anything. There's so many playmakers on the field, so many elite talents. We've got two coaches that are, you know, offensive whiz kids and looking to prove it, looking to prove themselves in the postseason and you know, bury some hatchets and grind some axes and whatever other metaphor you want to use, get over some humps, get monkeys off backs. I think it's going to be a fantastic game, and we want you there listening when we broadcast it live on halftime, 9 o'clock ET, just like we always do. And then of course that show will go back into the feed. So if you get up on stage and ask us some questions or chop it up with us in the chat, you will get to be in the feed on your national podcast, 3 and Out. Keep giving us 5-star readings. Keep sharing the word. Guys, we are growing. We are seeing it. We are seeing you share on social media. We are seeing you download on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Alexa, Overcast, Castro, Podchaser, all of these apps, all of these you know, aggregation sites, all these directories. You guys are going out there for us, sharing on social media at 3OutPod on Twitter, at 3OutPod on Instagram, at 3OutPod.com. Keep doing it, because we're going to keep doing it for you. We are 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.